And thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. From digital IDs to catalytic converters, we explain five new state laws to know in 2025. What you should know about the bird flu as Illinois officials issue a warning.
Mayor Daley told me that if I carried Ohio, that he would deliver all of Adlai Stevenson's votes to me in the Democratic convention.
Remembering President Jimmy Carter and his relationship with Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley.
The sound hits them the moment they walk through the doors.
And we visit the Galloping Ghost Arcade, where old school video game arcade culture is getting an extra life. And now to some of today's top stories. Former President Jimmy Carter will be laid to rest next week on January 9th, which President Joe Biden has also declared a national day of mourning. The 39th president of the United States died yesterday at his home in Georgia after nearly 2 years in hospice care. At the age of 100, he lived longer than any U.S. president in history. The Carter Center says public observances will be held in Atlanta and Washington, followed by a private interment in his hometown, though final arrangements are still in the works. And we'll have more on Carter's legacy later in the program. Public transit agencies are again offering free rides on New Year's Eve to make sure revelers can celebrate safely. CTA is offering free rides on trains and buses from 10 p.m. Tuesday until 4 a.m. Wednesday. PACE is also offering free bus service and ADA paratransit during that same time window. And riders can hop on Metra for free going to or from downtown stations after 6 p.m. on New Year's Eve. But train lines will be operating on reduced schedules Tuesday, with alcohol banned on Metra trains after 7 p.m. All three will be running their Sunday schedules on Wednesday, New Year's Day. In a season that can't come to a close soon enough, the kickoff time for the Bears' final game is set. The limping Chicago Bears will face the playoff-bound Packers in Green Bay on Sunday at noon. It'll be the 210th meeting between the teams. While the Bears are eliminated from playoff contention, the team is trying to beat its hated rivals, who have beaten the Bears 11 straight times. Meanwhile, the spotlight Sunday night will be on the two other NFC North teams as the Detroit Lions and Minnesota Vikings play for the division title and the number one seed in the playoffs. Up next, Nick Blumberg and Amanda Venicky break down some of the new laws to know in the new year.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
With the new year comes new laws, nearly 300 of them in Illinois. WTTW News reporter Amanda Vinicky joins us now with a rundown. All right, Amanda, what do you got for us?
All right, Nick, no need to go through all 293 of these. Some are as simple as establishing a task force to examine clean water policy or allowing special license plates on motorcycles. But others could be more relevant in your day-to-day life.
All right, well, tell us about some of those. We don't want to go through all 293, but what are the important ones?
We'll cover five all for 2025. How's that?
Fair.
Beginning with one that could make life more convenient for folks who like to travel light. If anyone has seen my work bag, you'll know that I am not one of those people. But still, when your phone can serve as a mini computer, credit card, and L-Pass, it's tempting to leave your wallet completely behind, and a new law could help make that possible. It creates a digital ID. If you already have a driver's license or a state ID, the Secretary of State can issue a mobile version in addition to the physical one. Essentially, flash the ID on your phone and it's like showing your regular license.
All right, do we have any idea when that's going to be rolled out?
I asked the Secretary of State's office for that information, as this had been a campaign pledge of Alexi Junulius. They did not get back to me, however, with a timeline and also no details on exactly how this rollout will work. But something to know for when it does happen, the law stipulates that establishments cannot require a mobile ID. So if you want to stay old school, you certainly can.
Fair enough. Something for the Luddites. Are there any other new rules of the road that we should be paying attention to?
Well, this one might give rideshare drivers a bit of a headache, but will come as a relief, I bet, to travelers, especially during busy holiday times. Cars cannot stop or idle on the shoulder near O'Hare Airport. The tollway will be able to install cameras to catch violators. And another new policy, also meant to catch lawbreakers. Now, this time, those who steal cars' catalytic converters, which contain metals that fetch a pretty price as scrap. The goal is to prevent that by requiring would-be metal scrap sellers to show a car title proving their ownership of the vehicle. Dealers also must keep records of the car title and vehicle ID from which the catalytic converter was removed.
Yeah, that's not a fun day when you find out that happens.
No.
Well, I don't drive all that much anymore, but I do love to travel, and I know there is a new law impacting hotel guests.
So this actually becomes a mandate starting in July, so hotels and guests have about a half a year yet to prepare. But after that, larger hotels, as in those with at least 50 rooms, can no longer offer single-use plastic bottles of, say, shampoo or body wash. A year from now, that's going to apply to smaller boutique hotels as well, and the goal, to cut down on plastic. Lesson being, pack your own, or hotels could offer larger bottles of soaps and such.
All right. Well, before we go, let's move on to a set of laws that put some restrictions on e-cigarettes.
All right. I'm cheating. This is a bit of a twofer here, Nick. You have one law that essentially copies a federal one because it is federally illegal to mail e-cigarettes to minors. Now it is illegal by state law, too. And that really makes it easier for Illinois to prosecute violators. Another one, manufacturers now banned from marketing vapes disguised as other products, something the Lung Association says teachers are seeing in their classrooms.
This law came out of the fact that there are products that are designed to look like things that we'd use in schools, including pens and calculators and watches, that are actually vapes.
Now, there are, of course, many more worthy of mention, so for good measure, I'm going to tack on a few extra. Now, statewide, the minimum wage is rising to $15, though it is already higher in Chicago. Police will be trained on how to respond to individuals with autism, and also landlords banned from raising rent or otherwise retaliating because a tenant complains, takes legal action, or joins a tenant union.
All right, all good stuff. Thank you for the bonus ones. We appreciate it, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
And you can read Amanda's full story on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. We're back with more right after this.
Dozens of Illinois birds have been killed by the highly pathogenic avian flu, which has also infected some cattle and caused several severe human cases in the United States. None of those human cases have been in Illinois, but several people have been infected in neighboring Wisconsin and Michigan. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed a total of 66 cases in humans. And the agency stresses that while the current public health risk remains low, bird flu should still be closely monitored. Joining us on Zoom is Seth Magley, director of the Urban Wildlife Institute at Lincoln Park Zoo. Seth, thank you for joining us. First, if you would, remind us, what is bird flu or avian flu?
Yeah, bird flu, as the name implies, it's an influenza virus that affects mainly birds, but part of the reason we become concerned is because it can also impact mammals, including humans.
And how is it spread?
So it's spread, like most flus, mostly through airborne contact. There's never been a case of a human-to-human contact of avian influenza, but it can spread to you or one of your pets, for example, from a bird if you come into close contact.
And just to be clear, how is it, for now, how is it spreading from birds to humans?
So, as you said earlier, there's no cases in Illinois, and most of the human cases involve people who work in poultry farms or otherwise closely with birds. But we do have concerns about, for example, the fact that a lot of cats seem to be getting this disease, which makes sense because cats roam outdoors, and if they encounter a dead bird, they're likely to interact with it. And so many of those cats, when they come home, we're worried there may be the potential for spread to humans. So one of the things we're really strongly suggesting to folks is if you have cats, please keep them inside.
And as you said, and as we've said, no human cases in the state of Illinois with great sickness. But how is it affecting Chicago and Illinois?
Yeah, as you said, not a lot of human cases yet, but really impacting our bird communities. It's something, for example, at the zoo, we're always on a close watch out for. We have many rare and endangered birds that are under our care at the Lincoln Park Zoo. We have no cases as of yet, but it's something that we're watching very closely with our veterinary staff.
What is it that makes this strain, the H5N1 strain, particularly concerning compared to previous outbreaks of bird flu?
Yeah, two things. One, it seems to have a very high mortality rate of birds. It kills a lot of the birds that it infects. And another is it seems to be a little more able to infect other species like mammals, cats, humans, dogs, than previous strains.
And as we mentioned, CDC experts are saying that right now the likelihood of human exposure in Illinois remains low. What do we know about the likelihood of human exposure in Illinois?
Yeah, I would agree that it's very low. We're not aware of any cases, and even worldwide, the cases of humans contracting bird flu are very low. But that said, we want to keep those rates low. So if you see dead birds or even really any dead wildlife in your neighborhood, never a good idea to contact or touch those specimens. We always say about wildlife, observe, don't disturb. You really can't help by coming into direct contact with any animals that you see.
Are you concerned about a potential pandemic down the road if some of this, what we've already said, should change?
Well, I think the risk is low, as the CDC is saying. I'm not overly concerned, but like I said, I think about, for example, in urban areas like Chicago, the potential. We have so many, for example, cats on the landscape. We have many communities that seem to be actively trying to increase their cat populations to control rats or for other reasons. And we know that cats are very susceptible. We've heard about a big cat sanctuary in Washington State where half of the cats died from avian influenza. So I do worry about that potential with the cats going in and out of houses, impacting birds, and then people that we could have people start to be infected. Which is, of course, the last thing we want.
And to that point, what is your advice to cat owners?
Really just keep your cats inside. There's really no risk as long as you keep your cats indoors. So I think that's the key thing we can do to prevent human outbreaks.
And of course, we've also seen the virus contracted by cattle. How does that affect our consumption of dairy products or even beef products?
Yeah, you know, I think that we have very good food safety protocols in this country, so I don't become overly concerned. But I did, to bring things back to cats again, I did hear of some cases of cats who were fed poultry in raw cat food that had avian influenza that were then infected. So it's always worth thinking about what both we and our pets eat. But I think that we have a lot of good safety protocols in place there. I don't think people should be overly concerned.
What steps, you mentioned some, what steps are you all taking at the zoo to be sure that you're protecting your animals, but also your staff and visitors?
Yeah, we're trying to get the word out about things people can do to help. I already mentioned keeping cats inside. Another is when there's an outbreak like this, just take down your bird feeders. Bird feeders create a place for birds to congregate closely together. That can create disease transmission risk between those birds. So I know birds are a lot of fun to watch. We all love our bird feeders. But I think at a time like this, bring them in and put them back out after this sort of crisis has passed.
What steps are state agencies taking to prevent the spread of bird flu among wildlife, domestic animals, humans?
Yeah, the state agencies are always doing sampling of these different bird communities, trying to figure out where outbreaks happen, how we can predict them and prevent them, as well as doing laboratory testing to when a dead animal shows up to determine whether it died from avian influenza or some other cause. So, yeah, those biologists who work in those agencies are really working tirelessly to protect both wildlife and the public.
I mean, for people who hear about the bird flu and they assume that this is mainly affecting wildlife, there's no real cause for concern for the rest of us. Why do you think people should care about the health of the urban wildlife ecosystem?
Yeah, so at the Urban Wildlife Institute at the zoo, we run a major research program in what's called One Health, a program in combined human, animal, and environmental health. And we know that all of those systems are linked. So when you have a huge outbreak of disease in the wildlife community, for example, there can be the potential it can spread to humans, but also just by negatively impacting our environment around us, it can have really negative effects down the road. And we know that many of the most common human diseases that we all struggle with originate in animals. A good example, of course, is COVID. That virus actually originated in wildlife, and we see that happening more and more. So it's always worth keeping an eye on the health of our wildlife communities.
Do you ever think illnesses like this are sort of reflective of the state of the urban wildlife ecosystem and how it's doing, how it's being treated and cared for?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons we study these diseases is as an early warning system. And we think as a zoo at the Lincoln Park Zoo, we think we can be an excellent early warning system because we have animals from all over the world who are susceptible to all different types of diseases. And when we see any kind of outbreak in our collection and the animals under our care, we're in communication with those public health and state health agencies to make sure that they know that there may be a novel disease in the environment. But it's absolutely critical to keep us all healthy that we keep an eye on how our environment is doing.
Seth, what do we know or what can we learn from previous outbreaks of avian flu?
Well, each outbreak is a little different, right? There are always different strains, but one of the things that we know is that they can come through pretty quickly. They can cause large mortality events, but if we continue to be able to pinpoint where those outbreaks are happening, maybe what are the environmental factors that lead to a different type of outbreak, then we learn, we get a little bit smarter for next time. We become able to prevent those diseases, and an amazing number of people are really working behind the scenes to try to make sure that these outbreaks don't become pandemics.
Okay. Seth Magley, best of luck to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, a blast from the button-mashing past. Stay with us. WTTW won a number of Emmy Awards in 2024, including two for Chicago Tonight. We thought it would be a good time to revisit one of them. From the beckoning screens to the bleeping chiptunes, the sounds and sights of a video game arcade are unlike anything else. And while these days, gamers can get their Super Mario fix from home, those who crave that in-person experience need look no further than Brookfield's Galloping Ghost Arcade, where arcade culture is getting a power-up.
The sound hits them the moment they walk through the doors.
Round one, fight!
It's one of those things that resonates with them instantaneously. It takes them back to going to arcades back in the day.
He's got it!
Memories coming back audibly.
I've been a gamer like since my youth, like since the Atari days. I guess you could call it therapy. You know, some people want to go out, some people prefer drinking. I've been doing this at a very young age, and right now I'm in my mid-40s and I am still doing this.
It's a very community-heavy arcade.
Ghost Squad.
You get old-school arcade, hardcore players, competitive players that wants to put on special costumes and chat. And overall, just, you know, what kind of scores we put on, what's our favorite game, and overall, just having a very overall great time.
Ghost Squad.
What's great about this place is that everything outside of the arcade gaming realm is kind of left outside.
Round one, fight.
Whatever kind of differences people might have, it's kind of just squashed, and guys just come here to talk shop about video games. Like, we had a couple gentlemen up front just kind of strategizing on how to get a higher score in Ultra Beast.
Power up.
It's pretty cool like that.
The gaming here is my life. The arcade's my life. A lot of people my age, they like competition. They want to know who's the best. And we have plenty of that here at the Galloping Ghost, so that's what makes it fun. I think that's what motivates people to come here in the first place.
Fight for what's right, fight for your life.
I like to dress fancy, look cool, and basically bring the community together by, you know, looking really nice and sharp. It is literally a living museum, and you know, it's not like a museum where you can't touch the exhibit. It's literally a museum where you can just play anything
your heart desires. Like, literally every machine here is playable.
Michael!
I've been personally playing arcade games since I was 4 or 5 years old. First arcade game I ever played was Asteroids.
Time to play the game!
Final round.
It was such a tremendous amount of fun for me growing up going to arcades. It's like people aren't going to be able to enjoy that if there aren't any arcades anymore. I didn't want this stuff to go away.
It's all about the game, and how you play it.
Our first company was Galloping Ghost Productions, which opened up back in 1994, making video games. And as we watched the arcade scene, it was always on the radar to open an arcade. But it wasn't until 2010 when everything just happened to line up. Brookfield had the foresight to let us try it, and nobody knew what was going to happen. Even industry people were saying that they didn't think we would last more than 6 months. Nobody had heard of a free play business model where you pay a door fee and all the machines are set on free play. I've been able to bring in game designers, and 30 years after they've made games, they're seeing families still love and appreciate the games that they made all those years ago. And that's so satisfying. Like, these are the guys that inspired me to get into game design, and now we're able to show that people are still enjoying their artwork and their craft after decades. I knew from a very young age that I wanted to work in the video game industry. There's the gaming side of it, there's the creative side of it, artwork and music, and just get to do everything that's fun every day. So it's, you never hear a complaint from me.
Ha! Finish!
And of course, we have more information on Galloping Ghost Arcade on our website. And shout out to our own champions, Erica Gunderson and Damon Ranger, on their Emmy Award for that story. We're back with more right after this. And as we mentioned earlier, President Jimmy Carter died yesterday in Plains, Georgia, at the age of 100. Carter appeared on Chicago Tonight a number of times. In this 2006 conversation with John Calaway, Carter talks about his relationship with Mayor Richard J. Daley and how Daley helped him get the 1976 Democratic nomination for president.
Well, I came here as an unknown governor from Georgia, and I immediately acquired the policy of going to see Mayor J. Daley, Dick Daley.
Richard J. the First,
and just to pay my respects. And he took a liking to me for some reason. I think he was intrigued with Southern politics, and I would spend some time with him on each visit. That was when I maybe had 3 or 4% in the polls. Nobody thought I was going to win. But as the time developed and as I picked up strength, he was supporting Adlai Stevenson, Jr. around the state as a favorite son. And toward the end, Mayor Daley told me that if I carried Ohio, that he would deliver all of Adlai Stevenson's votes to me in the Democratic Convention. So the night that I carried Ohio, the phone rang. Mayor Daley was on the phone. He said, "You've got 273 votes in the Democratic Convention that you didn't have a few moments ago." And then the most memorable thing, though, was when I went to a rally at the last minute, and it was a big hall like an opera house, and Adlai Stevenson was asked to introduce me. He gave me the worst introduction I have ever had in my life. It was really embarrassing to me and everybody there. And I didn't know what to say when I got up. There was about 7,000 or 8,000 people there. It was right last stages of the campaign. And I got up and said, "Adlai, I don't know what to say to your campaign, but I'd like to point out one thing. When your father ran for president against Dwight Eisenhower, he didn't carry Illinois, but he carried Georgia in 1952. In 1956, when he ran for president again, he didn't carry his home state, but he carried Georgia. And I'm grateful for the people in Illinois that gave me their support."
Have you had a chance over the years ever to talk with him about that?
Not really. Well, I saw him a few times in Washington, and I would say we were moderately friendly and certainly polite to each other.
But you haven't forgotten?
Well, you can say I haven't forgotten. I don't hold it against him. It was a humorous thing that happened because I had the election basically won.
The late President Jimmy Carter on Chicago Tonight in 2006. And that's our show for this Monday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And you can also follow us on Blue Sky at WTTW. And join us tomorrow at 5:30 and Wednesday at 10 as we ring in the new year by breaking down the biggest stories of 2024. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.